हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मावीर्यवशावहै शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so Chudamani's question. I've come across instructions in the Gita and Bhagavatam about how bhakti is begotten from Shraddha. Kindly explain to me how the Jiva may endeavor to possess that Shraddha. Vaishnava Das Babaji. Some people who are learned in the conclusions of the Shastra have explained that the word Shraddha means to have faith in the Vedas and in the words of Sri Guru. This meaning is not wrong, but is not entirely clear. In our Sampradaya, the meaning of the word Shraddha is given as follows. Shraddha is the characteristic function of the heart that strives towards bhakti alone, which is totally devoid of karma and jnana, and which desires nothing other than the exclusive pleasure of Krishna. Because otherwise, means anybody who is following the Veda because they feel that the Veda is going to give the proper benefit, it is the authority, it's the proper thing to do, then of course that is Shraddha. But it's not the, how you say, as you mentioned here, it's not completely clear, because what's not clear, the element that is based on authority is clear, but what's not clear is what's the purpose of having that faith. Right? So therefore he's saying that in the Gaudiyas, then they're going to describe it as when that Shraddha is striving towards only towards bhakti, free from karma and jnana. In other words, Shraddha in pure devotional service. That's actually faith. Yes.
Is it similar to Dharma in the sense that the nature of the soul is to love the Lord? And so Shraddha, is that a similar thing, that the nature of the soul?
The nature of the soul, but in here then you have to say Sadharma. Because we were discussing about, because this is what this is the discussion that the Nitya Dharma and then the Naimittic. The Nitya meaning with the eternal service, and the Naimittic meaning what's based on bodily conditioning. So the thing is one could have faith in following the Veda, you know, because he understands his nature is the soul and not the body, and that, and for the purposes for upliftment. But you have the weakness that you're following the Veda, but you could be following for karma kanda or for jnana, right? So karma jnana. But here it's saying is faith means you're accepting, of course, the authority of the Veda and Guru, but the purpose is you're taking those instructions, directing them directly at Krishna, for developing love for Krishna without karma or jnana. So that's actual Shraddha. Because the other one is, that Shraddha can come or go, because the Naimittic Dharma can come and go, but the Sad Dharma, that will always remain. Does that work? Yeah. Okay. When the sadhaka regularly hears the instructions of sadhus in the association of Shuddha Bhaktas, a conviction arises in the heart that he cannot obtain the eternal welfare by the methods of karma, jnana, yoga, and so on, and that he has no means of success unless he takes exclusive shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Hari. Right? So that you gain it, one would say, well, how does that gain? That's gained in the association of devotees. It won't be gotten otherwise, right? Means, in other words, the pure devotee has that kind of faith, right? That only by developing love for Krishna, and expressing that directing all one's activities towards Krishna without karma or jnana, right? So by that association, you'll get that kind of faith, right? Like King Nriga, he had the faith that if you followed the authority of Brahmins performing the Vedic activities, you'd be happy, right? Because they had that faith. He gained that faith from them, right? Then later on, after, you know, performing so many, you know, sacrifices, then Narad Muni came to him and showed him that, okay, it's nice, you've done all this, but all these animals are going to be waiting for you. So now what? And it was kind of like, but, you know, I never knew about this because I only had that faith which I gained from those kind of karma kind of Brahmins. I didn't know about devotional Brahmins, you know, or Vaishnavas. So that association, so that's why here is that we've made the definition of faith, right? It's that, in other words, that faith that only through pure devotion that will be actually happy, you know, or that will be, you know, situated in our proper function. But that's gained by regular hearing the instructions of the saintly persons in the association of saintly persons. Right? It's not just associating with saintly persons, but what are we hearing? Right? And it's not just hearing without the association. So you're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. And so generally when it's defined, the two are put together, though they're two separate things. Mm-hmm. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees. But the point is devotees associating doesn't have any meaning without Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam doesn't have any meaning without devotees. So they go together. Right? Does that make sense? So it's all connected. Exclusive shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Hari. When this conviction appears, it may be understood that Shraddha has arisen in the sadhaka's heart. Because you might have someone who has faith in the Vedas, right? Like Vaishnav Das had faith in the Vedas and in Guru, right? So did Lahiri Babu, right? And in this discussion, so does Chudamani, right? That's why he's out there. He has faith in the Veda and that he feels that they're not following the Veda properly. So he's not following what authorities are saying, right? He's misunderstanding or misrepresenting the Mahajanas. Right? So you can say as all of them had faith, but they didn't have the devotional faith, because that's real faith. Mm-hmm. Right? Because everybody has faith. Right? It means you stand at the bus stop there, and you have faith that there's a bus going to show up, and it's going to be the right bus. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you're there, and you know you want to catch the bus down to 55th Street. You don't expect the bus to pull up to, say, Los Angeles. Right, you know, it should say, you know, you want it to go. And when you do get on the bus, you have faith that it'll go to where you want. Not that, you know, you got in there and then you find out that you're in Disney World, right? Even though it said Los Angeles, but you were standing in New York, right? You know, so you don't expect that. Does that make sense? Because you have faith. Does that make sense? You go into a drugstore, you expect you can get your prescription fulfilled. Not when you get inside, you see all they're selling is exotic fruit. You know? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, if outside it says, you know, Ferrari, you walk inside, you expect to see cars, not you go inside and there's bicycles or something. Right? They painted them red, of course. You know, but like that. Does that make sense? So faith is there as you expect something to happen. But that's not what we're defining as Shraddha when we're saying Shraddha the Prema. So Shraddha means faith in pure devotional service that's been gained by the hearing about the Lord in the association of devotees. Right? Yes.
So my faith is connected to the awareness, to be aware about what type of association we have.
Yeah.
Message we have.
Yeah. Means you're aware that there's something more than yourself.
Yes.
Means we have the faith that if I perform my activities nicely, you know, however I define nice and whatever my authority is, I'll be happy in this world. Right? Does that make sense? So now you're becoming aware that there's something beyond this world. Right? That the soul is beyond the body, so being beyond the body, it's going to be properly situated in being beyond. Mm-hmm. You know, it means, in other words, its endeavor, its understanding is beyond the body. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
And in this case, like real Shraddha means beyond the Brahman, Paramatma concept.
Yes, beyond Brahman, because these other things is that, because that's, because Brahman means it's just karma. It's only up to the level of karma, right? And so that means, because when we say free from karma and jnana, karma means fruitive activities, means that we're going to get some benefit ourselves out of whatever the endeavor is. Even if we're performing a devotional activity, but I think I'll get some benefit. I'm performing artik and everybody will know, or I address the deities and everyone will say, oh, you did such a nice job. You know, if we're expecting that, that's karma. It's karma misra. Right? In other words, there's some result we want from it from ourselves. Jnana is we want to be freed from the material nature. So I'm doing this service because I'll be purified, and then without sin, then we'll be freed from material entanglement. That's jnana. Right? So pure means it's only being done to please Krishna, right? Which desires nothing other than the exclusive pleasure of Krishna. Right? Because exclusive pleasure, because if we want our own pleasure, then that's karma and jnana, right? It means karma meaning that the result of it, and jnana meaning that I'm not, that it's spiritual rather than material. So the happiness from being situated spiritual, or karma from the happiness from enjoying the result gained from it. But if it's exclusive pleasure of Krishna, I'm doing it only to please Krishna, right? Because you understand anyways, if you water the root, the leaves are automatically satisfied. If I try to water the leaves, it won't work very good. Okay. When this conviction appears, it may be understood that Shraddha has arisen in the sadhaka's heart. Shraddha is characterized by external symptoms known as Sharanagati, surrender to Sri Hari. Now, how do you tell that's there? Because Sharanagati, that process is there. Right? Sharanagati is described as follows in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, 11.6.7.6. The six divisions of surrender are the acceptance of things favorable to the execution of devotional service, the rejection of unfavorable things. You take up the association, devotees, chanting, whatever it is, taking prasad, and you give up whatever is not. You know, just associating with the karmis, you know, like this, following means, yeah. The conviction that Krishna will give protection, right, rather than I'll make my own arrangements. So it doesn't mean that if it's your duty, you don't take care, right? The parent protects this child because it's their duty. Not that they think I'm the one protecting the child. No, it's Krishna's protecting the child. But he's doing it through the medium of our duties, right? It's not our ability that's protecting the child. It's our duty to protect the child. Krishna will take care of the child anyway. But since we have that kind of interest in all that, therefore Krishna engages us in assisting him in protecting the child. Does that make sense? You know, that's how it works.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Sometimes devotees, when they get sick, so they avoid the medicine, they say Krishna protect me.
Okay, but how will he protect? What's the method he'll protect you? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You say you don't take medicine. Okay, great. But how will he protect? What's the method?
They will be cured automatically.
Automatically. And how does automatic work? Okay, just like you go down to a, how you say, an automat. Right? It's a place where they have all the machines that automatically do things, like wash clothes, or they give things, or, you know, stuff like that. How do you get that machine? You don't have to do anything, technically. It will wash your clothes. Right? No? Right? So, all you have to do is think about it, and they'll wash your clothes, right? The machine will come to your house, go and pick up all the clothes all over the house, take them down, wash them, get them dried, get them ironed, folded, bring them back, and put them inside your shelf, right? Is that how it works? No, how does it work?
You have to put the cloth, you have to put in the powder, water, and push the bottom out.
Okay, you forgot about the
wine.
The coin.
I don't use it, so I
yeah.
Okay. But even if you have one in your house, right, it will automatically wash your clothes as long as you collect them, put them inside, and put them in the wash, and yeah, it's plugged in, and all the different things are arranged. Right? So that's the point, is how? What does this automatic mean? Does that make sense? So it's all right if you don't take medicine, right? As long as you know the main point is going back to Godhead, right? Because by not taking medicine, if during that time you go back to Godhead, you're not worried about it, and neither is anybody else. You understand? Otherwise, taking medicine is also a prescription of the Veda, right? And the power of the herb is Krishna. Right? So since Krishna has to heal, what about our endeavor in becoming healthy? Because automatic. So then, are you staying in your house? Are you laying in bed? Right? Or you're not taking any medicine, you're going about your normal duties and everything. Is that what they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Nothing like that.
But are they taking time off and just being sick in their house? You catch the point? Are they doing that or not? In other words, they have a fever. Are they staying at home and laying in bed, but not taking medicine and saying Krishna will take care? Yes or no? The point is this: definite answers get definite discussions. You understand? So are they staying at home, or they have the fever, they don't care, they're at work, they're doing the service, they're doing everything.
They're staying at home.
So why are they doing that? Because why are they doing that? Why stay at home?
Because they're sick.
Okay, but why does staying at home have anything to do with being sick? What's the connection?
Because they can't perform activities.
Oh, so they're only at home because they can't perform activities, not that being at home actually has some benefit to curing the sickness.
Yeah. They get rest or cure.
Okay, so if they're getting rest or cure, they're making an endeavor for assisting in their healing process. So why can't they take medicine as part of the healing process? You understand? It's not logical. I'm saying if they say, I'm taking no medicine and I'm not doing anything to make any adjustments in my life for the sickness, I'm going on as if everything's normal, then it has a meaning. Does that make sense? But if they're making adjustments in their lifestyle, why can't they make adjustments in what they're eating? Because there's probably also making adjustments in their eating. So why is it they're making adjustments in the lifestyle, their eating, you know, their activities, but not in the medicine? Why that one thing is being singled out? You know what I'm saying? And is there any particular geographic location they're from that are doing this? Huh? Because it's between the Atlantic and the Pacific, there is particular religions that's what they do. So there may be that particular condition. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the thing is one has to be one should be consistent. You know what I'm saying? Shastra recommends that when you're older, you know, you're not involved in family life and that anymore, specifically when you get like into the vanaprastha stage, you know, or when it's, you know, you're definitely old and things aren't going to happen much anymore. At that time, it recommends if you stop taking medicine, then it's not a problem, because then you burn off all those things. But because we're doing service to Krishna, better you do service. You get more benefit from performing the service. You understand? Because the point is the karmis, it's recommended they don't do that because you're old anyway, right? So that if you have different diseases, different problems, you can't do anything, better now than next life. Because what's not burned up this life, you'll get next life, right? So then why when, you know, you're an age when you could be, you know, fit and working and that, then you'll have these diseases. No? So better now, right? But the point is for us, there isn't later. The point is you get more out of serving than you will out of having the disease just because you want to burn off the karma. Because why do you want to burn off the karma? You know what I'm saying? Because Krishna will help, but what are you doing? How are you absorbed in service? So better to do service. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, does that make sense? Yeah. So the idea is that how can you increase service, not how to get rid of karma. You know what I'm saying? If you do service, karma is automatically gotten rid of. So you don't have to separately endeavor.
And it doesn't matter whether we are taking allopathic medicine or ayurvedic medicine, if you're doing service.
It means whatever medicine works.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? What works, what's available, what you have faith in. You know, in other words, you have faith in the ayurvedic medicine, it works for you, it's available, you take it. You know, why take the allopath? But, you know, if it's not available, then you take the allopath. You know, or if you don't have faith in the Ayurvedic, you know, you only like the allopath, then take it. Who cares? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that means, in other words, we have things that are just done. It's why do we prefer Ayurvedic? It's only because it's according to Shastra. Means the other one is according to observation. So, you know, in much areas it's quite developed. You know, in other areas it's like they wouldn't know what, I mean, they know what a liver is, but they wouldn't have any idea what to do with it. You know, so there's absolutely no development there. But, you know, things to do with the heart or other things, very developed. You know, so the point is, you know, where it's useful, then if that's what's available, you use it. But the point is why we prefer Ayurveda is simply because it's connection with Shastra. So that means it's connecting with Krishna and his laws. But the point is in any case, whether it's from Shastra or not, the point is it being connected to Krishna and his service. That's the important element. Yes.
It depends on the type of faith we have, of Shraddha we have.
Suppose yeah, but I'm saying is, these are considerations of a naimittic.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But the point is whether what you're able to, how you're able to use it in Krishna's service, that's based on the nitya. Someone likes Ayurvedic medicine, someone likes allopath, someone likes homeopath, someone has their own things, they'll figure it out on the internet, you know, or they got some funny little machine. That's all conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You're doing it because this is Shastra and we're supposed to follow Shastra. That means then you have that higher faith in the mode of goodness and authority in Shastra. Right? Otherwise, it's no, you have faith in the scientists. You know, whatever it is, but it's still, these are all naimittic faith. Right? The faith in the Shastra is your best of all your conditioned faith. But that it's what works for doing service to Krishna, this works good, so you use it. That works best. That's what you're trying to get to. Is that okay?
Okay.
The acceptance is the Lord is one's guardian and master. Right, so that Krishna is the one taking care. It means he'll give protection, and that's because he's maintaining. He's the one taking care. Right? It means, in other words, we do our duties and what we're supposed, how we're supposed to take part in this. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, it's our duty, we make the endeavor. Right? So if the duty is there to take the medicine, you take it. That's your duty. You know what I'm saying? That makes sense. Means otherwise, why does the Shastra make rules like, let's say you have a vrata or a vow. Taking your medicine doesn't break that. Let's say you're fasting, but taking your medicine doesn't break that. Why is that? Or doing achman doesn't break it. You know, I don't drink water, but achman means I'm sipping water. So, you know what I'm saying? No, it doesn't break the vow. Right? Does that make sense? Why? Because these are normal things to do. Because if you're depending on, you're not going to take medicine, you're totally dependent on Krishna there, great. But is it there all that? You have no possessions, you have no place to stay, it's just whatever, you know, the devotees arrange that the temple gives you. And so that's what you do. You eat only what is available. You wear only what's available. You understand? Then that makes some sense. You know, if you had a devotee, he's very detached, doesn't have anything, you know, except for just what basic things he needs. He doesn't have any place, you know, just whatever the temple provides, whatever food comes from just the you know, that they provide. He does whatever service is given, you know, or maybe more mature, that he has some direction or leading something. But he has nothing himself. So if someone like that doesn't take medicine, that's consistent. But if he has his house, he has his this, he has his that, he has his whole social scene, he has all of his opinions about everything and that, but he doesn't take medicine because Krishna will take care, then the point is how's Krishna? It means Krishna has his ways to take care, but aren't you supposed to be doing your part in taking care? You know, you're not saying, well, Krishna will take care of my kids, you know, and fix dinner for them. No, you're going into the kitchen and making dinner. You know? You know what I'm saying? Krishna will educate my kids. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So we're doing everything else, but this one thing we're not doing. So where does that come from? That is coming from conditioning. Our own specific, you know, brand of conditioning. Does that make sense? You know?
Not understanding the point.
Yeah, missing the point. We're so, go to the temple, just chant, just this, it doesn't matter. All these other things aren't important, but, you know, we'll only eat this kind of food, you know. Is it organic? You know what I'm saying? But what happened to the just, you know, it's just about Krishna. Is it prasad? That's the important point. If it's all about chanting, all about being at the temple, only about devotees, you know, we're only talking about Krishna, great. But then the food is it prasad? If it's prasad, we eat it. If it's not prasad, we don't eat it. If it's organic and not prasad, we don't eat it. But if it's not organic and it's prasad, we eat it. You understand? So that's what happens is there's all these very nice devotional things, and then at one point it has nothing to do with devotional service. It's our own conditioning. But because we take it, devotional service is good, organic is good, therefore organic is devotional service. That's the logic. Organic is devotional service. Why? Because organic is good. That's the logic, right? Right? Devotional service, in this case, being the minor, you know, organic being the major term, right? And so the middle term is it's good. It's natural. It's good for your health, right? But good for what health? Good for the body. And devotional service, is it good for the body? Is that why we do it? Or it's good for the soul? So is the body and the soul the same? So therefore, devotional service and organic aren't connected. Not by this logic. You know what I'm saying? Because why is organic good? Yes, but why is organic good? It's good, it's healthy, it's natural. Yes, so who cares? Why? Right? 50s, no one cared. You know, that was the, you know, time. If it's inorganic, that's what's good. Man-made, that's perfection, because man is improving on nature. That was the thing, 50s, 60s, that was the whole thing. You know, they figured out how they can play with material nature, and wow, hey, this is an improvement. You know?
Green revolution.
Huh?
Green revolution, they say.
No, that was the opposite. The Green Revolution came after about, you know, 15 years of that, and they figured out, something's wrong. Right. You understand? Because no one really heard about cancer until the 50s either, right? You know, so, it all came together, right? But if we're talking devotional, why is organic good?
Because it keeps our body healthy and we can perform more service.
Okay, but then, you know, so many things keep our body healthy, so therefore, keep your body healthy, but, you know, getting up early, taking a cold bath, you know, not criticizing devotees, not being anxiety, not being attached. All these things are also good for the health, right? Because it means, in other words, what you eat, right? The mentality, your cleanliness. So are those same devotees very clean? I don't mean by bacteria. I mean by actual, you know, pure, you know, rites. Are they that? They don't worry about that. So why are they only worrying about the food part of health? Overeating, right? Anxiety and uncleanliness. But we only worry about the eating part. Anxiety, what means? It means every food freak, if you're not in anxiety, you're not a bona fide food freak. You just can't be a food freak. If you're just natural and relaxed, you can't be a food freak. It's just one of the rules. Right? And cleanliness? Who cares about cleanliness? You understand? So that means 2 out of 3, over 66%, they don't care about, really. And they only care about, and the one that 33%, that's only their brand of how it should be. Not how God says. So that's the defect. The point is organic, because that's the natural way the universe works. And that's the natural laws that God gave. If things are supposed to be done in an organic way. It's not that organic is an option. That's just the way it's supposed to be. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's the way Krishna arranged it. So why would Krishna arrange it that way unless he likes it that way? So therefore, Krishna likes the natural organic things as a meaning, but it's actually only if it's offered with devotion, because if you give him organic things, no devotion, he'd rather have inorganic and, you know, or not organic, and devotion. You know what I'm saying? Because the devotion is easy, because he's got hundreds of thousands of Lakshmi, and what their mother just showed, everything she gives him is organic. You know, but nobody worries about it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so the point is that's just in line with God's laws. That's why it's good. Not because it makes the body healthy and this and that and it's all into... In other words, they're catching part of it, but it's not complete. It's not connected to the Lord. You know, so when devotees talk about, you know, all these different health considerations, all the moralism, all the different things of economics and being and truthfulness, all nice. It's nice stuff, but none of it's actually connected to Krishna. They're connected in their own way, and so because it's connected in their own way, at least there's some consideration, but it's not really. You know what I'm saying? You know, like the kids playing with the cat, okay? So what are they doing? Tying the cat up, dressing it up. Does a cat like that? No, cats don't really like that. But at the same time, it's some attention, and it's, you know, it's not malicious, so the cat kind of tolerates and hasn't scratched the kid's head off, right? Because otherwise the cat would, but you know what I'm saying? So you can't really say that, oh, you know, you're doing it for the... So you can say it's for Krishna, but actually, is it for Krishna? It's actually for our conditioned nature. You know what I'm saying? So it is, you're touching it to Krishna, but it's seriously mixed devotional service. So that's why it drives everybody else nuts. The devotional service part, no one minds. That you offered it to Krishna, everybody's happy. That, you know, that you talked about how organic and how this and that, and how while you're eating they're talking about it, and how this and that, and when you eat it this way, how can you do that? And can I have some salt? Oh, no, like that. All that kind of stuff has nothing to do with Krishna. It's purely 100% mundane. Maybe nice mundane, you know, if you're a freak, but as a human being, it's not nice. Right? Does that make sense? You want to be able to sit and peacefully eat. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's the same thing. So all these things, they're totally out of balance. Well meant, but totally out of balance. And that's why, one, it doesn't actually progress nicely in Krishna consciousness. And two, everybody else finds it annoying. Everybody else means, as we defined before, means other than that one other person who agrees with you. Yeah. You know? No, so many. Okay, 3 or 4. No, but on Facebook, you know, I got, you know, 15 people that agree. You know, there's 7 billion people on the planet, and 15 people agree, and you call that, you know, a majority? You know what I'm saying? You're not going to win any elections by that. You know? Does that make sense? You know, American presidential elections going on, and you know, the one came in with 15 votes, you know, like that, you know, like that, and the other one came in with, wow, he beat him by 1 vote. That was close, you know, 15-14. Yeah, you understand? It doesn't mean anything. You know what I'm saying? Our conditioning makes it into something. That's why Krishna is a protector and Krishna is a maintainer. So yes, Krishna will protect. But what's our duty? Now, if our duty is to not take any medicine, right, then that's what we do, and we leave it up to Krishna. But if it's our duty to take medicine, then you can't not take it and say Krishna will take care. You know? Because if that's there, then, you know, stop calling people about, you know, managing things about the household. You're still sick? Are you still calling this one? Stop that. Krishna will take care. You understand? Stop all that. You know what I'm saying? So it's a nice idea. You know? It's natural. That's what the animals do. But are we an animal? Right? If we're an animal, why are you in a house? Animals don't live in houses. Right? Okay. What you can build yourself? Yes. Did you build the house yourself? Okay. If you built your house yourself, okay, then maybe we'll talk. But how many devotees have built their own house? I mean, built their own house. Went out, collected the stuff, put it all together. You know what I'm saying? So, very few. So then the point is then why we're taking it, you know, the animal just sits there in the fever, it burns itself out. Yeah, okay, that's what the animals do, but we're not animals. Right? Kids are animals, that's why they don't like to take medicine. Right? Yes.
Yeah. That example of the bird, that the bird seems to be flitting around the sky, but he's always fearful. It's just a dream.
Yeah. That soaring like a bird, yeah. And then he's soaring like a bird. Either he's looking for someone to eat or trying to get away, or going to find something, you know, or trying to get away from being eaten. You know. Okay. Okay, full self-surrender, that I'm surrendered to Krishna, and humility. Right? That I am simply the servant of the servant. Right? When these moods become established in the heart, a disposition arises that is called Shraddha. Oh, we didn't deal with that one. Yeah, no, but I'm just wondering if we dealt with that. Because there were other ones. I was just going back and reading, since we were actually supposed to start when the moods become established.
This is where we stopped last time.
Was with the verse.
Yeah.
Okay, so then footnote 5. There are 6 symptoms of surrender. The first two are anukulyasya sankalpa and pratikulasya varjanam. I will only do what is favorable for unalloyed bhakti, right? That's the sankalpa, that's my vow. And I will reject what is unfavorable. Right? So I'll only do what is favorable, I will reject what's unfavorable. Because the point is what is devotional service? What's favorable to that? That's what I'll do, and what's not favorable is what I won't do. Right? So it's not a consideration of what's good for me or what's not good for me. The point is if I'm supposed to be engaged in Krishna service, then what's good for devotional service, that's good for us. Right? That's the actual logic. Does that make sense? Like that. Okay. You know, I'm going to do what's good for me, right? And so then good for me is devotional service. Why? Because I'm serving the Krishna. Does that make sense? This is called sankalpa or pratigya, a solemn vow. Right? The third symptom is rakshi yatiti vishvaso, faith in Bhagavan as one's protector. Bhagavan is my only protector. I can derive absolutely no benefit from jnana, yoga, and other such practices. It means as a process. So I just perform my duties in Krishna's consciousness. So if knowledge is there or other things are there, but it's part of my duties in which I'm using for Krishna, that's useful. But as a process, just like we're seeing, Nyaya is valuable as a method to understand the scriptures and how to discuss the scriptures. But as a philosophy, as one's own lifestyle, that's not useful. So in other words, activities and knowledge are useful in devotional service, but on their own, they're not separately useful. This is an expression of trust, vishvasya, vishvasa, right? Okay, so if Krishna is my protector, then I have trust, right? So Krishna won't take, I make my own arrangements, right? So therefore, lack of trust is actually the principle, right? It's not a matter of, no, but what happens if something happens? Yeah, it's just how much stuff being put away. You put away all the stuff, you know, you've invested in this and that, but your apartment is now flooded, right? Sandy rolled in and your apartment's flooded. Now what? You had all these arrangements, you made all this, you made all the money, that we have a house, now we'll be protected, you know. And then along came Sandy. Right? And then it's a problem. Know what I'm saying? You have all your money and this and that, and then there's, you know, recession. Or the stock market crashes. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know. You've worked it out, you have this fabulous plan and all this and that, but the hospital's closed. Right. Again, Sandy. So now what? So in other words, we can make all our arrangements, but if the Lord doesn't sanction it, it won't protect you. So in other words, why are you doing it? No, I'm not doing it because this will protect me. I'm doing it because this is my duty. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, that's why we do it like that. So therefore, Rupa Goswami has given us a formula. 25% is put away for emergency. Right? So is that what devotees put aside as emergency, 25%? There's a good chance they put either very little or nothing away, or they put away too much. They either couldn't care less, why should we worry about that, or not. No, the recommendation is 25% you put away. Right? Not because I'm attached to it, that's just what you're supposed to do. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what's not being seen. Right? Is that I'm doing it because that's what you're supposed to do. That's Krishna's arrangement. Right? It means if it wasn't important, that kind of thing, so protective. Why is it that the story in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is meant for the Paramahamsas and all that, then they discuss that point about Rupa Goswami and he put away that money. Now, if he hadn't put away that money, Sanatana Goswami would have spent his whole life in jail. Right? And so, you know, we wouldn't have, you know, Hari Bhakti Vilas or Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you know, worship of, you know, Madan Mohan and everything like that. You understand? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that it's not a matter of, it's that what is your duties, you do that in connection to Krishna. That's why it's so important. It says, perform your duties. We don't want to do our duties. We want to just do whatever we want, but the point is you're supposed to do things for Krishna, so it's supposed to be what Krishna likes, and so that's what the duties are. So we're doing whatever we feel like, and that's supposed to be pure devotional service. But if it's what we like to do exclusively, then how is it free from karma and jnana? Right? It's like, this is my duty, I like doing my duty, right? Why? Because my duty is according to my conditioning. My conditioning is good for doing these duties, so why you won't like it? Right, but the point's not because I like doing it; it's because Krishna likes it.
That's why devotees take care of the nature's law nicely and state law also. Naturally, they take care of these laws.
Yeah. I mean, that's there. But the point is it's not. They're naturally taking care because of its connection to Krishna. Yes. Krishna, who's given the concept of the state. Krishna, who's given the concept of all these things. That's why it's being followed. Point is it's always taken back to Krishna. Yeah. Okay. The fourth symptom is Goptritve Varana, deliberate acceptance of Bhagavan as one's maintainer. It's not that it's just that I cannot obtain anything or even maintain myself by my own endeavor. I will serve Bhagavan as far as I am able, and he will take care of me. Right? So I'm not making my endeavor to take care of myself. I'm making my endeavor to do my duties to take care of Krishna. But Krishna's arranged your duties take care of yourself. Occupation. What does the occupation do? Why are people worried about an occupation? Because it's how you take care of yourself. So the point is you're doing your duties, but to please Krishna. The problem is you do the duties not to please Krishna. Then it's just mundane. Just like, you know, you eat food. It means eating food is necessary to take care of the body. But you eat the food connected to Krishna. You understand? You can't just say, no, I'm eating food. Why are you doing it? Because I have to take care of the body. What happened to offering Krishna? No, but I have to take care of the body. You know, why don't you do this service to Krishna? No, but, you know, we have to be practical. You know, we have to make money. But why can't you do it for Krishna? No, we're being, you know, we're, you know, that's you know, that's nice philosophy, but we're being practical. What's the connection? You know what I'm saying? That's the difficulty, is that devotional service, nitya dharma, is so simple. It simply means doing what you're supposed to be doing connected to Krishna. Doing what you're supposed to be doing not connected to Krishna is not devotional service. It's mundane. And not doing what you're supposed to be doing, that's also mundane. You know, then there's always, what if you're doing what you're not supposed to be doing, but doing it for Krishna? You know, that's the mode of ignorance. You know, we always have to ask that one. Right? Prabhupada says, something done quickly and properly, that's the mode of goodness. Quickly and badly, that's the mode of passion. Slowly and badly, that's the mode of ignorance. So what's the question? What about slow and good? You know, that's called mixed passion, I mean goodness and ignorance. You know what I'm saying? So we always have to ask the question connected with ignorance. So here's that, I cannot attain anything or even maintain myself by my own endeavor, because you can do whatever you want. It doesn't matter. The modes of nature are going to make it a problem for you. Right? There's no, Maya does not say if you do everything properly, how you feel it should be done, I'll make everything wonderful for you. Right? She doesn't even say, you do everything how you're supposed to do it, you know, according to Shastra, according to karma and gyan, that I'll make everything nice for you. She just says, I'm going to make it a problem for you. That's her guarantee. So therefore, then I cannot obtain anything or maintain myself by my own endeavor. I will serve Bhagavan as far as I am able. Right? So the point is we're thinking serving is one thing and the, you know, my regular duties are another thing. Does that make sense? Because we're taking it that I have my daily duties, then I have the religious aspect. You know, you once a week you go to your whatever it is, the religious, you know, place of your choice, you know, and then that's the religious part. And now and again, okay, I think I'll be nice, or I'll give in charity, or I'll do something good. But the rest of the time, I'm doing just what the practical. That's the conditioning. Right? But what this, what the Vedic is that the duties you're doing, that's coming from Shastra. The sadhana you're doing, that's coming from Shastra. One is on the eternal platform, one's on the temporary platform. But the point is they're both according to Shastra. And Krishna's saying, don't just apply the sadhana to Krishna, apply your other activities to Krishna. So in other words, everything's connected to Krishna. But we must split it. The naimistic is for us, and the nitya, that's for Krishna. It's the most important, it's the most powerful, yes, great. So if you're going to, you know, make, then good. Right? But the point is Krishna saying, just you do all, it means you're doing all that because you want protection, you want to be maintained, and so therefore you're going to do what's favorable to that and give up what's unfavorable to that. You know, you can be fully surrendered to your material condition, and you know, you'll be proud about it. You know, you'll identify with it. Right? Does that make sense? So the six symptoms of non-surrender, you know, are very committed to. So Krishna's just saying, no, all those things, it's the same thing. Nothing changes. Just now connect that to Him. It's simple. But somehow or another, it's very eluding.
That's why I said in Bhagavad Gita that one should perform duty which is born out of his own nature.
Yes. Yes. So we're not saying, we're saying, well, I'm just being natural. So, yeah, so no one has a problem natural. The point is the natural should be connected to Krishna. Being natural, not connected to Krishna, that's called an animal, right? Animals are natural. Right? Yeah. I will serve Bhagavan as well. Okay. And he will take care of me, right? What is so then that comes back to the original point. By not taking the medicine, how is that service? You know what I'm saying? If it is service, great. But it's also, you could be taking medicine, at, you know, as service also. Because in the medicine, you're supposed to offer the medicine to the Lord, right? It means before you when you prepare it or take you chant mantra over it. When you take it, you're supposed to chant mantra and remember the Lord. So all that has service. That's where the potency works. Because the point of Krishna is the potency, the medicine. So therefore, by remembering Krishna, then you're directly in connection with what makes the medicine work. So that's how you're supposed to do it. Yes?
Would we offer medicine, we offer to death
like that? You can. You just drag it out and show it to Krishna. It's not that you get out there and sprinkle and do all the mantras and this and that. You just, unless it's something that, if the medicine is hot, fried begun and hot puris, then you offer it directly to the deity. I mean, then the deity through the normal thing, but if it's in a bottle with all kinds of funny little round pills, that you just, show and ask him to, purify it and like that.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Yes.
One devotee was dying, so the Guru Maharaj said, your service is to die for Krishna.
Okay, so then he's following order of Guru. Okay, this is what is meant by dependence. Notice the interesting thing is here is he pulls in what it is. You do this, that's dependence. You do this, this is trust. Right? If you do, if you give up, accept what's valuable and reject what's not valuable, that's a solemn vow. That's being fixed like that. Then if he sees Krishna as his protector, then that's trust. If he sees him as maintainer, then that is dependence. The fifth symptom is Atma, Nikshepa, surrender. Who am I? I am his. My duty is to fulfill his desire. This submission of the self is Atma Nivedanam. So that's what one is looking for. The sixth symptom is Karpanye, meekness. I am wretched, insignificant, and materially destitute. This is what is meant by humility, Karpanya or Dainya. But just because you're wretched, insignificant, materially destitute doesn't mean that you're not doing something, right, to please Krishna. You understand? Mode of ignorance means I'm wretched, insignificant, materially destitute, therefore I can't do anything, I do nothing. I just sit at home and mope. Right? Like that. But this is, actual means I'm wretched, insignificant, material destitute. It's not a matter of emotion. It's a matter of reality. The other one is that I'd love to be great and fabulous and famous and, everything like that, but I'm not. So therefore, I'm wretched, insignificant, materially destitute. So therefore, I'll sit at home and feel bad about myself. Right? That's mode of ignorance. That's coming from the mind. But this is I'm wretched, insignificant, materially destitute. That's just facts. That's just the mode of goodness. And so therefore, in this condition, I render my service. Okay. When these moods become established in the heart, a disposition arises that is called Shraddha. A jiva who has this Shraddha is eligible for bhakti. And this is the first stage in the development of the subhava, like that of those pure jivas who are eternally liberated. Right? See, it's the first stage of development. Right? In other words, yes. He's saying the swabhava, like those there. So then that position of bhava means it's actually you're working with the mood, right, of the eternally liberated, because bhava is on the platform of liberation. So this position is starting from Shraddha. Right? I'm servant of Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Adjusting with this by practicing these six systems, by being absorbed in Krishna. Does that make sense? So those start with Shraddha, though they find their maturity in bhava, but they're starting here. Therefore, this is the nitya swabhava of the jivas, and all other swabhavas are naimittika. Right? Swabhava means what is the nature, what is the mood, right? So all other ones means this is eternal, nitya. Everything else, that's naimittik. Right? Chudamani. Thank you. I have grasped your explanation. However, still you have omitted the subject of what evokes Shraddha. If sat karma, pious deeds, are the seeds that later sprout out as Shraddha, then my argument remains uncontested. Because if sat karma and described duties... If sat karma and prescribed duties according to one's varna are not properly executed within the varnashram system, then Shraddha cannot manifest itself, right? Because he still means he's shown how it's working and what it is, but he hasn't shown where it's coming from, because, or at least he has, but he didn't grasp it. So the point is then he's saying still it's coming from your duties, proper performance of your pious duties recommended in the Vedas, that will give rise to the Shraddha. Right, and so therefore, his point is: since the Muslim's not supposed to be doing these duties, then you know he won't, you know, or we're not supposed to associate with them. So then, how will that give rise to Shraddha, or how will that be an expression? Thus, the Yavanas do not have the possibility to perform sat karma. How can they become suitable candidates for preaching bhakti? Right. Because if they're not performing the sat karma according to the varnashram system, because they're not having the qualification, how are they going to be practicing bhakti? And if they're not, and if they're practicing bhakti, okay, if you associate with them, that's fine. But if they can't practice bhakti because it's coming from the sat karma, why are you associating with them? Right? Vaishnav Das Babaji. Yes, Shraddha is born of Sukriti, righteous activities. However, Sukriti is of two kinds, right? So now he's done all this, and that's in place. So now he's understood the explanation. Now it's a matter of, now what is this piety? Because before, if he explained there's two kinds of piety, you wouldn't understand. So he had to explain what's devotional service, what's Shraddha, all these different things. Then you can go back and now look at it. Nitya and Naimittik. Again, Nitya and Naimittik, right? The Shraddha is Nitya and Naimittik, so that means the righteous activities, the Sukriti, is Nitya and Naimittik. Because otherwise, Nitya gives rise to Nitya, Naimittik to Naimittik. Right? Because his problem is he's thinking that the material activities, which are technically Naimittik, are Nitya. Therefore, they're giving rise to Nitya. Right? But he doesn't connect what's that. So, okay. Sukriti released to Sat Sangha and Bhakti is Nitya Sukriti. And Sukriti, which results in material enjoyment and personal liberation, is Naimittika Sukriti, otherwise known as Anitya Sukriti. Sukriti is differentiated on the basis of the results. If the result is eternal, Sukriti is the eternal Nitya Sukriti. And if the result is evasive, evanescent, Sukriti is the temporal Naimittika Sukriti. Bhukti, sense gratification, is fleeting. Hence, that which produces bhukti is Naimittika Sukriti. The jiva is in himself Shuddha, Nitya, and Sanatan. The cause of the enslavement of the jiva is his intimate intercourse with Maya. Mukti, defined as the complete nullification of this enslavement, is dependent upon cause and effect, and being achieved in a moment is therefore a transitory and not an eternal action. When mukti is attained, all striving for mukti ceases immediately and then no longer a topic of discussion. Nevertheless, because of a lack of knowledge on the subject, many people falsely believe that mukti is eternal. In reality, however, mukti is actually only the removal of the material cause of bondage. Therefore, it is primarily Naimittika. Right? Because liberation means, catch the, there's a subtle point here. Because liberation means being freed from material entanglement, right? So there's a moment that you are freed from that material entanglement. So that moment, that's mukti. But what happens after that is not mukti, because mukti is defined as getting freed from material entanglement. So being freed from material entanglement actually is not mukti. You know what I'm saying? But because they think the two are the same, therefore it appears. But the problem is you've been freed. Now what? The soul is conscious. The soul is active. So he's actively endeavoring to free himself. But once he's freed himself, now what are you going to do? You know what I'm saying? So they're not distinguishing. So it's actually just a moment. That's liberation. So it's not eternal. It's only a moment. Right? Devotional service, that platform, that's eternal. Right? The service is eternal. The experience is eternal. The relationship is eternal. Right? It's not based on the externals. It's devotion, not based on what you're performing the activity with. Because the things that you're performing it with may change. That's the naimitta. You're doing it for Krishna. That's the nitya. Yes?
On the other hand, the moment's association with the pure devotee.
But that remains. The association remains. But the mukti is over in the moment. You understand? Just like, let's say, you're in a room. You want to get out of the room. What do? Open the door. And then? Go out the door. So there's a moment that you're out of the room. And then after that, it's not you're getting out of the room anymore. Mukti means getting out of the material world. So you're out of the material world. So you're not getting out of the material world anymore. So actually you're not on the platform of mukti. You're just on the platform of eternal existence. So eternal existence and mukti are two different things. You know what I'm saying? We try to put them together, but they're two different things. When mukti is mukti is defined as the complete nullification of this enslavement. It is dependent upon cause and effect. I'm doing the activity, therefore I'm getting the result. So even though they're saying it's transcendental and it's beyond and this and that, they're using the mundane cause and effect to get it. So if you're using the mundane cause and effect, that must be it has to have a material element. It has to have a temporary element, right? You know, if you're using the temporary to get it, it has to be temporary. Now, someone could argue, no, but you're also using temporary things in devotional service. No, but the point is that's not the devotion. The devotional service is doing whatever you're doing to please Krishna. So that position you can remain in eternally. What you're using may be constantly changing. But the other one is, I'm doing this, that will get me liberation. Right? It's not that I'm on the liberated platform, so therefore whatever I'm doing has nothing to do with material. It's on the spirit. They're not talking about that. Because their point is, if you're liberated, you're not interacting. So it's not eternal. It's a temporary position. Does that make sense? Yes.
Because your shraddha is in the temporary thing.
Yes, it's in the temporary thing, because it's in mukti, which is temporary. Okay. Mukti is defined as the complete nullification of this enslavement. It's dependent upon cause and effect. And being achieved in a moment is therefore a transitory and not an eternal action. When mukti is attained, all striving for mukti ceases immediately and is then no longer a topic of discussion. Nevertheless, because of a lack of knowledge in the subject, many people falsely believe that mukti is eternal. In reality, however, mukti is actually only the removal of the material cause of bondage. Therefore, it is primarily naimittika. Right? Primarily because all you're doing is removing it. Then you spend this whole lifetime removing it, and then there's a moment where it's removed. So that moment that's removed, that's the mukti. So, but the priority of majority of what you've done is all naimittic. Mm-hmm. Yes.
When does that moment
come? I mean, do you want like a
for example,
a date or?
Well, I'm just saying, like you say, it's for a moment, and then.
It means whenever it is. It's like, when do you walk through the door?
In regards to the material entanglement.
Yeah. So it's whenever it happens.
So, for example,
it could be Thursday afternoon, yeah.
So, like the moment you give up all the.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is. It's that, but it's that moment. And then after that, what do you do? Right? So that's something else. So that's a different definition. But according to the concept of mukti, it's all one. But here there's two different things. So that now mukti is there, but how do you find that position when you've already obtained, you've already performed and gotten the result of the mukti? Now what? How, what's that? But that's something separate. So if it's something separate, then mukti has nothing to do with it. If that's the eternal thing, then mukti is not actually an eternal thing. But if mukti is the thing, then what's that? You know what I'm saying? And then what's the endeavor to get that mukti? So the problem is that you have all these definitions that are all supposed to be one thing, but you can point out that there's different parts of the same thing. You know, so Brahman means it's not supposed to be able to be broken down, but here you're breaking it down, so it can't be technically Brahman what you're talking about. Does that make sense? So they're not actually means, it says here, nevertheless, because of a lack of knowledge in this subject, many people falsely believe that mukti is eternal. So that's the point. It's not. It's a temporary.
So that they are to forget about the mukti and the moment.
Yes.
Continue whatever you're doing and engage it in
Krishna's service. Because then you're situating yourself actually on the eternal platform. That can last. You understand? That position can last. But gaining mukti, there's a moment that it happens. And then it's, you know, anything, if there's a moment. You know, you got something to eat, there's a moment, you got it. It only took a moment to get it. You know, does that make sense? So everything happens in a moment. The point is that then that moment's over. But devotional service, then the next moment's also being used for Krishna, and the next moment eternally. So that's why it's eternal. You know, does that make sense? If someone says, no, but then you're doing service, then you stop because you're a sadhaka. But the point is, whatever's been done, that eternal sukriti or benefit is there. So it's not lost. But anything material, it's gained, but it will be lost. Right? Because it'll be burnt up. Well, devotional service just produces more devotional service. You understand? Therefore, that process of a so-called bhakti, which claims to generate mukti and then ceases to exist, is at best naimittic karma. Right? Because that's what Chudamani and his practitioners are doing. They're doing bhakti for mukti or bhakti for karma. In either case, it's a temporary result. So it's temporary because he's still not distinguishing between bhakti being eternal. Otherwise, why is he still asking this question? Right? He says he understands. He's grasped the explanation, but he hasn't understood actually why it's being explained. On the other hand, that bhakti which is present before the stage of mukti is attained, while mukti is attained, and which remains forever after mukti is attained, is quite different from the bhakti described above. Because the other bhakti is that you're using that as the method to get liberation. Then there's the moment of liberation, which you're not performing bhakti. Then there's after that, where there is also no bhakti. Right? So in other words, it was only the naimittic usage like that. And calling it bhakti because there was the direction towards Vishnu in a seeming mood of devotion. Like that. Not your Halloween mask, is it? No. Okay. 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 On the other hand, that bhakti which is present... Okay, we just read that. Okay, so you're doing devotional service. It's there. Then at the point of liberation, you're still rendering devotional service. And after liberation, you're rendering devotional service. That's nitya. That's eternal. Okay. Attachment to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Sri Hari, is endless and eternal. Hence, in a spiritual sense, no anga, limb of this process of surrender, can be termed naimittika. Right? Even though you may see it temporarily manifest, it's still not naimittic because its effect is not naimittic. It's eternal. What is called mukti is simply a byproduct of this bhakti. Right? In other words, you're rendering bhakti in the material world. And by continuing that, one comes to the point where one's out of the material world and now one's rendering bhakti in the spiritual world. Right? So there's a moment between the two, but in any case, that moment you're still rendering bhakti. Karma, yoga, and jnana all produced naimittic sukriti. Bhakta Sangha, the association of bhaktas, and Bhakti Kriya Sangha, contact with acts of devotion, produce Nitya Sukriti, right? Bhakta Sangha and Bhakti Kriya Sangha, right? Bhakta Sangha is the Sangha with bhaktas. Bhakti Kriya Sangha is the Bhakti Kriya, means the activities of, the associating with the activities of devotion. Right? So that's why we put together the devotees and the activities of the devotees. In other words, hearing Bhagavatam in the association. Contact, produce Nitya Sukriti. Only one who has accumulated Nitya Sukriti over many lifetimes will develop Shraddha. Naimittika Sukriti produces many different results, but it will not lead to the development of faith in unalloyed devotion. Right? Because you're using the naimittic, you're trying to get the results of this, either a karma or jnana, which are temporary. So how would you get unalloyed devotion, which is free from karma and jnana? Right? In other words, how would you use karma and jnana to get something that's free from karma and jnana? Right? So that means you can't. So that's why jnana yoga means connecting the jnana to Krishna. Karma yoga is connecting the karma to Krishna. So then you're not dealing with karma and jnana, you're dealing with devotional service, just using your knowledge and using your activities.
Yeah.
Buddhi, yes. Yes. Buddhi yoga. Yes. Does that make sense? Yeah. Chudamani, please explain clearly what you mean by Bhakta Sangha and Bhakta Kriya Sangha, contact with acts of devotion. From what type of Sukriti do these arise? In other words, now he's trying to gather it again. Okay, now you've said that Bhakti is coming from these two Sukritis, and that's Nitya. But where does that Sukriti come from? You know, because he's trying to get it back to, okay, but you get that from what we're doing. You know, okay, maybe you're at a higher stage of what we're doing, but what I'm doing is what causes your stage. So therefore, either I will get to it, or, you know, I'm rightly situated because you're only there because you did this. You know what I'm saying? So still he's trying to, but it's, we see it's getting finer and finer, you know, until finally there'll be nothing left. You know, that's the whole idea. Vaishnavdas. Bhakta Sangha means conversing with Shuddha Bhaktas, serving them and hearing their discourses, right? Because there was no elements of karma or jnana. Shuddha Bhaktas perform the activities of bhakti, such as public congregational chanting of Sri Nam. Participation in these activities or performing them on one's own is called Bhakti Kriya Sangha, contact with acts of devotion. In the Shastras, activities such as cleansing the temple of Sri Hari, offering a lamp to Tulsi, and observing Hari Vasara, Ekadasi, Janmashtami, Ram Navami, and other such days are called Bhakti Kriya. Even if one performs them accidentally or without pure Shraddha, they still create Bhakti Poshaka Sukriti, virtue that nourishes devotion. In other words, even within when we say Bhakti Sukriti, there's that which is directly the devotional Sukriti, and that which nourishes it. So in other words, if it's knowingly done, that's Bhakti Sukriti. If it's unknowingly done, it's this Bhakti Poshaka Sukriti. Right? When this Sukriti acquires strength after many lifetimes, Shraddha or Sadhu Sangha and Ananya Bhakti, exclusive devotion, develop, right? So that's the whole point is, if that Shraddha comes up, then you take up Sadhu Sangha. Yes. Right? So someone may have the Shraddha, but if they don't take up Sadhu Sangha, means that Shraddha hasn't developed that much, because then what's the next? In that association, you perform the Bhakti Kriya Sukriti. You perform the activities of devotion. Yes?
I think it's interesting still that like fasting and cleansing the temple and things, it's still considered Sukriti. It helps with bhakti, but it's not like this is bhakti. Like if you fast, this is, oh, you're so devotional or something. Like, it can help with cultivating bhakti, but in itself it's not.
No, because if you're fasting and it's not for Krishna, because you can fast and it's not for Krishna. I mean, you know, or he's not here. Our friend, you know. means you have, you know, in Ireland it's very popular to fast, you know, like that. You know, so they fast, you know, 50 days or something like that. But so fasting, but it's not devotion. So it's the it's recommended medium of devotion. You know, it's not a recommended political tool.
So what if it's like, okay, I'm fasting for Krishna, like I'm
fasting. So but then that becomes, it's connected to, so that's why it's devotion. Uh-huh. Because the thing itself and the means, in other words, the devotion and the form through which the devotion is expressed, they go together. They're different, but they're non-different. See, you point out the difference so you know actually what's the devotion. Right? Because the person thinks, I'm fasting, therefore he's so great. But the point is he doing that for Krishna? Is he thinking about Krishna? If all he's thinking about is food all day, right? Better he's not fasting and thinking of Krishna. Yeah, you understand? So the point is that it's the activity is the medium of the devotion, but the devotion can only be expressed through the medium. So you need both. So that's why the devotee does all these activities, right? You know, Hari Vasara, all these different things connected with festival days, connected with the Lord, right? So that's why it's done. So some will say, oh, well, it's not actually that, so we don't have to do it. Or no, it's the you know, devotion is doing these things, so I'm doing that. That is devotion. No, devotion is doing it to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So they go together. You can't, you know, and say, you know, you have a festival. You know, the festival is that you're doing, you know, that specialness, right? But now you have decoration. Decoration is one of the ways to express the festivalness. You know what I'm saying? You know, nice, you know, special, different prasad, different, you know, program, different, you know what I'm saying? These are all mediums to express specialness. Does that make sense? But it's not because you've decorated. That's what makes it, you know, devotional. You know, because people have weddings, they also decorate a lot, or you're opening a new, you know, whatever it is, car, house, they decorate, you know. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, one time Prabhupada said, I have created your security.
I have created?
Your secret security. Upon asking his disciple that what security we had that we come to devotional service, then Prabhupada says, I have created your security.
It means that Prabhupada's created the opportunities. See, because in your Vedic culture, these things are going on, so you naturally just take part in them. You know what I'm saying? In other words, as a householder, you're supposed to do certain yajnas or given charity. And you're inviting, therefore, Brahmins. And then ideally those Brahmins are Vaishnavas. You know, so you're bringing to your house, you're feeding them. But it's not, ideally then there's some discussions go on, but they may not be. So by feeding Vaishnavas, that's Sukriti. Then eventually that'll grow to where you'll actually want to associate with them and talk about Krishna consciousness. Or you're doing something and giving in charity. Or, you know, it seems so you're getting this association, but you're not really taking advantage, it's just part of your karma. You know what I'm saying? So then slowly, slowly, but it's that association of Vaishnavas that makes it the Sukriti. You know what I'm saying? So in this case, then Prabhupada's come and he's arranged the festivals and the kirtans and all that, otherwise they wouldn't be doing it. So he's created, that means they just happen to be walking through Tompkins Square Park. Or walking by it because it's really small, right? And so, therefore, walking by it, you can hear somebody playing on a drum. How many people play on a drum in a park in the middle of a city, right? So then you walk in, you know, just check out what's happening, right? And then you come in, there's some old guy sitting on the sidewalk, right? We see the tree there, but that's, you know, on the sidewalk. We think Prabhupada's sitting on the lawn. No, he's sitting on the sidewalk. Because he sat on the grass, and they told him he can't sit on the grass. So he's sitting on the sidewalk. Right? And so therefore, then you come and you may hear, or something like that. And he's doing it every day, so every day you hear. And this way, that way, then you develop the sukriti that then you want to know what's going on. Because otherwise, Prabhupada was doing that a long time before people really were responding in a dynamic way. Does that make sense? You know. So he's creating the sukriti. So that's what the preaching movement is. No one's really interested. Right? You have some program, they're not going to go. So it means like so you go out. That's what the preaching is. Right? It means there's the preaching of going out, and then there's also who have come, then you preach there also. So the whole point is associate hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the association of devotees. So if they come to the temple and hear, great. If not, you go out and you give association and discuss Bhagavatam. Does that make sense?
So now if the groups who are teaching like yoga in Ghana, they are helping people to develop Naimittika Sukriti.
Yes. Like that. That's why they're peaceful. It means they like it because they're peaceful because you're actually doing something as Shastra and, you know, being, you know, not yes. worrying about material things yes. and all that. Yes. So it works. It gets them their material Sukriti. Yes. But it won't get this devotional. Yes. It's a separate thing. Right? So that's why when devotees go, the point is yoga is the common point, not asans.
Yes.
Not the specific philosophy, but that yoga and philosophy, that's the common ground. So then you show the kinds of yoga and therefore what benefits you get from each. So you can do this, and that this will give you that peace, but then this will give you beyond that. That's the position. It's not... When the Sukriti acquires strength after many lifetimes, Shraddha or Sadhusanga and Ananya Bhakti exclusive devotion develops. It must be acknowledged that every Vastu, substance, has some particular potency which is known as Vastu Shakti, the inherent potency of that substance. The potency to nourish Bhakti is found only within the activities of Bhakti. Now, karma then can nourish, you know, your fruit of results, or jnana can nourish the liberation, but only bhakti can nourish bhakti. That's what's unique about it, because the one is this cause and effect. This one is that the cause is the effect. The effect is the cause. You know, that's what's unique about it. These activities produce sukriti even if they are performed indifferently. What to speak when they are performed with faith? This is expressed in Prabhasa Kanda, quoted in Hari Bhakti Vilas, 11.4.51. Sri Krishna Nama is the sweetest among all things that are sweet. It stands supreme amongst all that is auspicious. It is the eternal, fully ripened spiritual fruit of the wish-fulfilling trees of the Vedas. O best of the Bhrigus, if anyone even once offenselessly chants Sri Krishna Nama, either with faith or indifference, Sri Krishna Nama immediately delivers that person from the ocean of material existence. Right? So offenselessly means you're not doing anything wrong here. But it also mentions with indifference. Right? Like that. It doesn't mean that you don't know you're chanting it, you're just indifferent to it. Like that. Right? So that's different from inattentive chanting. You know, so in other words, offenseless chanting can be done even on this level, and one gets liberated. So that's why liberation is not a big deal. It means the biggest thing you can get from any naimittic activity is liberation, and that you can get by chanting in indifference. Right? Like thus, all types of sukriti that nourish bhakti are nitya sukriti. When this sukriti becomes strong, one gradually develops shraddha in ananya bhakti, unalloyed devotion. Right? Means you develop faith, means we have understanding about it, but slowly we give up and actually function on that as a value. So we start seeing that all the material arrangements won't actually make me happy. Right? Okay. One gradually develops Shraddha. When the Sukriti becomes strong, one gradually develops Shraddha and Ananya Bhakti, unalloyed Bhakti. And one attains Sadhu Sangha, right? Because then it becomes dynamic. Right? It's through the association of devotees that you got the Shraddha in the first place. All the Sukriti is coming by the association of devotees. But you don't take up the association of devotees. That's why it's not called Shraddha yet. It's just that Sukriti. When you take up that association, that's the symptom of the Shraddha. Birth in a Muslim family is the result of Naimittika Duskriti, or temporary impious deeds. Whereas faith in Ananya Bhakti is the result of Nitya Sukriti, eternal pious deeds. What is surprising about that? So in other words, both could be going on at once. Because they're two different things. Chudamani. This is what I meant by my previous question. If there is such a thing as Bhakti Poshaka Sukriti, virtue that nourishes devotion, it must derive from some other type of Sukriti. Right? He's still trying to get back to that it's coming from a different kind of Sukriti. And that different kind of Sukriti is just material piety. And therefore, you can only do that material piety if you have the material qualification. The Muslim doesn't have that qualification, therefore he couldn't have bhakti. But what he's pointed out is no, it's actually coming from bhakti is only the thing nourishing bhakti. In other words, he catches everything except the essence. Right? Each time. So that brings it to the next question. Yes.
Birth in a particular family will give you a pious situation.
Yes.
Without that, you can still manifest some of that piety, but you can't maintain it.
That's there, but yes, on the material platform. But the spiritual platform is it doesn't matter what the family, devotional Sukriti can always be cultivated. Yes, that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, just taking an example, this Muslim thing. One devotee was saying that, you know, because in the family, so she has, you know, her altar, so she hides it in a room in the cabinet. You know, keeps that closed. So when the door is closed, then she can keep it open and chant and do all that. When not, she keeps the door closed and everything like that. So that means the nitya can go on anywhere. But because of the naimittik, she has to be careful about, you know, others seeing. You know what I'm saying? So that's the duskriti. Right. That's the bad result. The bad result, she has to hide it. But you can do it no matter what the situation. So the two can be happening at once. But Muslims do not have any other type of Sukriti. So it is not possible for them to have Bhakti Poshaka Sukriti either. Right? He still has it. He still said they don't have any other kind of Sukriti. Right? And Vaishnav Das is not complaining about that. That's not his point. His point is Nitya Sukriti, or actual devotional Sukriti, can go on because that's the nature of the soul. It doesn't matter what is the material situation of Sukriti. That can function anyway. Right? Because he's taken the poshaka, or the nourishment, is something separate, but he didn't catch that bhakti only comes from bhakti. Right? Bhakti is the cause, bhakti is the result. He's still taking it that bhakti is the result, so what's the cause? Sukriti is the cause. Now but he explained that the bhakti poshaka sukriti is that you're performing the devotional activity accidentally or without faith. So you don't actually know its nature and what it is, but you're doing it. Like, you know, you see the Rath Yatra. You know, and you know, it looks like, you know, it's like some fun. You know, you don't, not a nimitz. Not when you see it, then immediately, you know, your fangs come out and horns, and your head turns red, and that, and you start growling and all that. So you just think, okay, nice. You know, so you just walk along. You know, you're walking that direction anyway, and you got, you know, 3 blocks until you know you have to turn left there. So you walk for 3 blocks along. You know, walk along and that. There, Jan and Clan. Yeah, you might do it. You know, okay, it's happening. Everybody else is doing it. It's cool. And then when you get up to your street, then yeah, you know, if you made any contact, okay, Hari Ball. If not, you just okay, that was nice, and turn the corner and back to normal life. You know, does that make sense? So that's Bhakti Poshika Sukriti. But he's thinking that it's nourishing Sukriti, so it's coming from somewhere else. But he still didn't catch that the Sukriti is coming from bhakti. Even the nourishing of the Sukriti is coming from bhakti. And the result of the Sukriti is bhakti. So he hasn't caught that it's a, you know, completely self-contained system. So he says, this is what I meant by my previous question. Means, please explain what you mean by Bhakti Sangha and Bhakti Kriya Sangha. Didn't he say again? Okay, no. There is son of Bhakti Poshak is Sukriti. It must arrive from some other type of Sukriti. But Muslims do not have another type of Sukriti. So it is not possible for them to have Bhakti Poshak is Sukriti either. Right? Vaishnava Das. This is not a fact. Nitya Sukriti and Naimittika Sukriti are classified separately, right? So in other words, he's explained it very nicely together, pleasantly. He hasn't caught it. So now he's just going to break it apart very, very clearly and like that. Does that make sense? You know, you say it really nice. He doesn't understand. So you hit him over the head with a shovel. And then, oh, that's what you meant. Right? You know, you make it very obvious. You know, if you're obvious, oh, that's too harsh. If you're pleasant, oh, then, you know, you don't catch the point. So it's like, okay. That is not a fact. Nitya Sukriti and Naimittika Sukriti are classified separately, so they do not depend upon one another. Hence, there was a sinful hunter who was full of impious deeds, but who chanced to stay up all night and fast on Shivaratri. Because of the Nitya Sukriti he accrued from this, he developed eligibility for Hari Bhakti. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 12:13:16, among Vaishnava, Shivaji is best. From the statement is understood that Mahadev is the most worshipable Vaishnava. One obtains Hari Bhakti by observing a vow to please him. Right? But if you're doing the vow that you want to get liberation or, you know, some other pious, then that's what you'll get. You won't get the Bhakti Sukriti. But if you by accident do something to please Shiva, then since he's a devotee, automatically you'll go towards Bhakti Sukriti. Does that make sense? Listen. Okay, so end here.
You see him as a person related to Krishna, then you get Krishna.
Yeah, then it'll be directly devotional service. Mm-hmm. Right? Like that. So that's the... So he's taking devotional service, Sukriti, but then there's also what nourishes the Sukriti. Right? So in other words, unknowingly doing it, and then you knowingly do it. So like, you get in the kind of, you get that, it's interesting, this looks nice, so you come around the temple, you be with devotees, you take prasad, they engage you in some service. Like that. So now that's directly dealing with the Sukriti. Before that, you were doing things that just nourished the Sukriti. And then that will then mature into actually having that faith, and that will be seen because you take up the association of devotees. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.